There's so many people speaking about Dhamma. Aren't there? Wherever we go, if it's a meditation center, or going group, and he talks about this kind of enlightenment, or this kind of practice, and this kind of practice, and this is the way Buddhism is, or that is the way Buddhism is. They all know it. Seem to know it. But when you put your finger on it, you know, there's nothing. Just hot air. Gone. So, and we don't want that to happen to us. We just smile, you know. If somebody really asks the question, what are you doing, you know, of course, then we can answer. But don't convince others. The moment you convince, it doesn't matter if it is practice or if it is, you know, if it is yoga or if you have to convince others that what you are doing is right, you know, then what you are doing is wrong. You haven't a basis, you know, you are not confident yourself. People need other people, you know, to to feel assured that what they are doing is right. Huh? You need other people, you know, to feel assured that, oh, I'm doing right, you know, because other people are doing the same thing. So if you see, you know, then just let's take a bad example. If you see some people killing other people, you know, then we think, oh, that's great, you know, let's go ahead and do it again. If they do it, you know, we can do it. The same with stealing, you know, or lying. Oh, they lie, and nobody really minds. Huh? They're stealing and nobody really minds, you know, it's a whole group. If you get out of this group, you know, then there's another group, you know, who does a lot of good. Gives a lot, you know, it's very generous. And we do that for a while. We just cannot be on ourselves. We cannot just rely on it seems that we cannot rely on ourselves. Look at the people in the world. They all need a leader. Is it a village leader? Is it a town leader? Or is a state leader? To rely on, to feel secure. We need our family as a basic of our security. And it lacks completely. You're not secure. You're completely insecure. The moment we are alone, we are afraid. And that's because out of the reason of feeling insecure, that's why we're looking for others. We're looking for a leader. Doesn't matter where he leads us. As long as he leads us. And if you remember very well in the Second World War, the Germans were really led astray. They believed him and followed him with all their means and might. And the same thing happens in the spiritual world. There are good leaders and there are bad leaders. And Tenzin Mahabodhi says there are a lot of false teachers. How can we know that this is a false teacher? If we do not have any place to retract to, if we don't have any place to retreat to, how do we know this is the right teacher and this is the wrong teacher? Maybe I'm a wrong teacher, maybe I'm one of the false teachers. How do you know? Huh? Maybe I lead you astray. How do you know? You can only know one way. As the Lord Buddha says, to distinguish. If that what a teacher says to you, and you follow it, and this will lead to wholesomeness, then you can trust this person. If that what he teaches, either you cannot reach, or you cannot gain, or it doesn't lead to a wholesome state, then you should not follow him. It's a famous sutta of Kusala. The city of Kusala, where the people ask, the Lord Buddha, you know, there are so many different teachers, you know, who should we believe in? Who should we follow? And then the Lord Buddha said it in this way. And he said it, you know, he didn't say, you know, only my teaching is the one. Huh? He didn't say that. He wanted the people, you know, to see for themselves, to be able to judge for themselves. And he, in the end, he said, you know, you have to do the same thing with my teaching. Check it out. If it leads to wholesome states of mind, or if it leads to unwholesome state of mind. Or if it leads to the states of mind that I promise you, or not. That's how we can distinguish as more or less stupid people, you know, what is good and what is not good. Stupid in the sense that we do not know the basis of our own being. That's what I call stupid. The more we are far from our own being, the more stupid we become. In other words, the more we are in our head and think about this, think about that, the more stupid we are. The more educated we are, the more stupid we get. Because the more we go away from what is really ourselves. And the practice that is taught here, or the practice that is taught by the Lord Buddha, is finding the source, finding ourselves. The moment we find ourselves, where's the problem? The whole world can stand on its head and say what we are doing is wrong. If we find our true self, you know, what does it matter? What other people say? That is where the basis of our practice starts. To find that resting place. To find that there is something that is beyond everything. The true nature of our citta. And you can find it, and it really is not that difficult if you would put your attention to it, if you would put your mindfulness to it, your awareness to it, and keep repeating the word Buddha, 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 until it drops into the state of Appanna Samadhi. And then you would for the first time really experience your true self. And you don't have to ask anybody when you come out. And you know, you're sure. You have never been more sure than after that experience. Insecurity is created because we are separate from our true self. So, huh? That's why we're insecure. The moment we are unified, huh? Where's insecurity? Where's worries? Where's doubt? It already vanished in Upachara Samadhi. It already, doubt and worries and insecurity already, and fear already vanish in that state of mind. But we might not yet understand the true nature of the citta. But the moment we come out, we feel insecure again. But that should not happen when we go into the deep state of samadhi. We know there is something that is beyond our description, and we have experienced it. And no matter what people are saying, what this is, it really doesn't matter to us. We have found a place where we can stay. We have found a place where we can always rest. We have found a place where we always can retreat. Now do you understand the importance of samadhi? The importance of practicing samadhi. And the importance of sati. The importance of mindfulness. Awareness. Sati is awareness. Sati, you have to understand that term sati. You really have to understand. Sati. And Tenajan Mahabodh says, the moment there is sati, there are no kilesas. Only if there is no sati, then the kilesas can grab hold of us. The moment there is sati, the kilesas cannot grab hold of us. Because we are occupied with this one object. When we are occupied with this one object, be it the breath, or be it the Buddha, or be it the body, or be it whatever it is, the kilesas cannot enter. And it shows that it is objective. That is what is called sati. So don't get mixed up with your ideas of mindfulness or awareness. Just refer to that description of sati. And sati is so important that the Lord Buddha said, a person who has sati for 7 days and 7 nights, he can reach enlightenment after these 7 days. Do you see the importance of sati? It's this objective quality of the mind that just sees what is going in, what is going out, what is happening inside us. And that kind of happening that inside us reveals the true nature of our being. And that's why when somebody observes it for 7 days and 7 nights, you can get enlightened within that time. If our sati is not so strong, the Lord Buddha gives us 7 months or 7 years or 7 lifetimes. So it all depends on our strength of sati. And this is the thing that we have to develop in tandem with samadhi. The sati is grabbing hold of the object and not letting go. Think about it, it is your lifesaver. The object of your attention is your lifesaver. You are in the midst of a vast ocean, you know, up in the waves, high or low, and the only thing that you can grab that keeps you above the water level is that sati. That's the only thing that keeps you alive. Otherwise you're drowning in the sea of kilesas. You're whirled around by the storms of greed, hatred and delusion. But if you have sati, you have at least a moment where you can relax. So understand now, you know, the importance of sati and understand how to develop it. You can have sati even if you go out. You can be aware of whatever is going on, is coming into your mind, or whatever is happening with your body, or whatever is happening with your Buddha. You can be aware of that all the time. And if you're aware of this, the kilesas have no power to intrude. But if they come and say, you know, oh, I want this, I want that, I'm not satisfied with this, you know, then you don't have any sati. In Thai there's a nice idiom, mami sati satang. You don't have a penny worth of sati. And then all our practice, if there is no sati, all our practice is fruitless, hopeless, useless. If we can't see, if we can't observe what is going on, what's the use of it? We've lived all our life, you know, without sati. And the life goes on by itself. We just seem to function like a computer or like a robot. There's a program, you know, program from the first day of its life, you know, until the last day, until it explodes or until it gives up its functioning. That's it. It's a program that we're installed in the moment we are born. So, and that is working itself through the lifetime of this robot. It doesn't need any sati. It just works, you know, it just functions depending on his program. And what is the program? It's karma. That's a program that leads that robot. So if you do not develop sati, you know there is no way, you know, to get into this functioning, to separate it off and to cut it off. Because we don't know what kind of program is running. We just work, we just walk, and we just look here and we just look there. I don't know where our mind is. It's all over the place. But it's not there. What is going on? And it's not there to see who is actually giving the commands. Huh? Who's giving the commands? Who tells you to get up from sitting? Who tells you to stop, to walk, meditation? Who tells you to go to shit? Who tells you to go to drink? Who tells you to go to eat? Huh? Who commands you around? You satisfied with this? Are you really satisfied with this? That there's constantly somebody, you know, who commands you around? You don't want to become free? Free of this oppressor? Constantly following his commands? Say, this is nice and this is not nice. Bringing you up in the hells and bringing you down in the hells and bringing you up in the heaven. Huh? If you like it, you know, it's your choice. I don't mind. It's completely your choice. It's within your hands. It's within your fingertips. You are the one who could be able to change the program of this robot and make this robot a human being. Huh? A human being. I mean, a person who has a sense of responsibility, who is not just functioning. But we have to stop all these programs. Or evaluate if these programs are working for our benefit or working for our destruction. You don't know what is going on. You just follow, oh yeah, I'm tired, yeah, okay, you follow this command. Now I want to eat, and then you follow this command. Now I want to shit, you know, and follow this command. Now I want to do something, I want to see another town, you know, you follow this command. Where's the end of it? No, no. There's no end. If you don't put an end to it, you know, there's no end. You disobey the commander. It's difficult. Because the moment you disobey, he will create some dukkha. Very discomforting things. Very unpleasant things. And that's his way, you know. It's like an animal, you know, we are we have an animal and we want to go it this way or that way, and then we have a whip, you know, if it doesn't want to go this way, we just whip it. And the whip of the kilesas is the dukkha. So we go. Wow, we go, you know, and we love to go. Just evading this dukkha. And whenever we are going the wrong way, in his terms, then he takes out the whip. Whatever. It can be fear, it can be doubt, it can be anything. It can be sleepiness, it can be tiredness, it can be sickness, it can be anything. Or it can be painful feelings. Or mind feelings, the states of mind that are unpleasant. That are all his whip. And he whips us. Well, okay, do it. If you don't do it, you know, I show you how to do it. But people in the world are so satisfied with it. Huh? But they actually have never thought about it. They just do whatever comes into their mind. It's a holy cow, you know, like in India. Nobody is allowed to touch it. Even if it stands in the middle of the street and the cars cannot go and pass, you know, nobody's allowed to. It's a holy cow. Never mind, it's just like this holy cow. Nobody's allowed to touch it. Oh, wow. It goes into your house and shits on the floor. And that's like the Kilesas, they always shit in our heart. All what they do is to shit, you know. And we have to clean it up. I don't know how to bring this. To get your attention, you know, to see, to at least to see it, you know, just to see it a little bit and get this urgency of doing something against it. To seeing a little bit of this. Even if I say it just jokingly, you know, because it is really a joke. When you see it from the other side of other side of the mountain, it is a joke. But you know, you're caught in that joke. And you can't see it, it's a joke. That's the most difficult thing. It's really a bad joke as well. Seeing, you know, saying this to you, you know, it's trying to create an urgency, you know, to get rid of this command. Really. The urgency takes place in every moment, every step we take. Oh, do I have sati? No. Okay. Where's my sati? Where is it gone? When I walk to the sala, don't think about, you know, in the morning when you walk, you all think about what kind of food is there today. What am I going to eat today? How much am I going to eat? You know, the mind is completely occupied with the food that has not yet arisen. When you walk towards the sala, you know, then you walk, you have sati when you walk. You're aware of the Buddha, or you're aware of the breath, or you're aware of the movements of your body. And you don't look right, and you don't look left. You just look around. Ahead of you, just like doing walking meditation. You're not interested. And when you see that the mind goes out, is interested in this or that. When you're in the sala, you're not. When you're male, you look at the females. Huh? Why do you want to burn yourself? You're here to practice. Eh? When you go out in the world, I don't mind, you know, if you look at the females. And if you look at the males, or woman. Being interested, you know, the first contact, the first raga tanha arises, you know, in the moment of the sense contacts, you know, the eyes. When you see the other sex, it's most interesting. You just look, you know, the second look and the third look and then the first thought and then it starts. Huh? And it's burning up yourself. There's no opportunity here in this monastery for that. If you go out, you know, do whatever you please. But when you are here, you know, it is, you just burn yourself, and it takes this, even if you take a long look, but it all comes from my own practice. If you take a longer look at a woman, you know, this image stays on for hours. If she was interested, it stays on for hours, you know, and then how do you get rid of it? The wanting, the grasping of this image stays on for hours. Huh? And the only way to get rid of it is doing a supa, you know. Okay, tear off the skin of her. Thus it disappears. Or cut her up into little bits and pieces. Or strip the meat of her. Or the sinews, or the bones, or whatever. So But then this is kind of work, you know, that we have to do. But if we do not have this tool ready, you know, we are gone. We are gone in the hot fire of this raga tanha, of the sensual desires. And we're looking for a way out. And if you're lay people, you know, then we already determined, okay, in a weekend I go to this place and, you know, all that. If you're monks, we can't do that. Not at least, not easily. We have to disrobe first. And that takes a step. Well, it's a good step, you know, it does take a step. You have to think about it. But I heard of some of the stories that even didn't think about it, were just running. And the longer this you stay, you know, maybe if you stay for a month or 2 months, you know, it doesn't really matter that much. You're not really worried about that, because before you came here, you had enough of it. But beware, you know, if you stay here for a few years, you know, and then this certainly comes up. It is like we eat a lot of chocolate, and then for 2 or 3 weeks, we are not really interested in having any chocolate. So if there is no chocolate around, we don't mind. But after a few months of no chocolate, or this or not, then we start thinking about it. So that shows, what does it show us? It shows us that once we we give in to the senses, and we eat enough of this, then we seem to be satisfied. That shows us the illusion of it. But after a while, we want it again. Why do we want it again? If it's so lasting, you know, why do we want it again? And again, and again, and again. Having the first partner, having the second partner, the third partner, fourth partner, and so on. And how does the first partner differ from the second partner? It's a male or it's a female. It's the same organs. With this one we don't get along, and with the next one we don't get along, and with the third one we don't get along. Because we don't get along with ourselves. That's a problem. If we would get along with ourselves, you know, there wouldn't be any problem getting along with another person. And it all leads back to, you know, closing the circle, back to our insecurity, to the basic feeling of insecurity. Based on this feeling of insecurity, we make so many mistakes, make so many wrong decisions. Just based on this sense of separateness, being separate from ourselves. So we're looking in other people, you know, to fix that. To find a unity in a group of people who think alike, in a group of people who do alike. Human beings, or all kind of beings, cannot be alone on themselves. Most of them. They have to look for a group, for feeling secure, completing their lack of separateness. When we are together with two, you know, we don't feel so separate. That's the most reason why we want to have somebody. We are lacking our own self. We are separate from our own self, and we try to retrieve it, you know, finding somebody, a partner, mostly of the opposite sex. That we live with, we'll share with, we do everything with. And that gives us the illusion that we are not separated anymore. At least for a while, until that feeling comes up again. Especially for people who practice, it comes up pretty quickly. They know that this isn't the right thing. This is not the way how to overcome separateness, to find a group or to find a monastery, or to find this or find that. The only way is to come to yourself, to find yourself, to find the center of your heart, to find the center of the citta. And once you are in the center of the citta, where is the problem? There is no problem. No problem at all. No worries, no doubts. The moment we enter upacara samadhi and there are no thoughts anymore, no worries can arise, no doubts can arise, nothing of this sort. That's why we feel so happy in that state. That is the only reason why we feel so happy. Because there are no worries, there are no fear, there is no doubt. Nothing of this sort is there. And that's the reason why we feel so happy and secure there. And once we enter Apana Samadhi, then we feel completely holy. Holy in the sense spelled with an H or spelled with a WH. It means the same thing. A holy person is a person who is complete, who is not separated from itself anymore. You can spell it with H or you can spell it with WH. Holy or holy. It's the same meaning. It stems from the same word. Being whole. And a person who is whole, what does he need? Nothing. What do we need when we are whole? Nothing. Because nothing is lacking. But if you feel separated, you know, everything is lacking. We need water, we need this, we need that, we need a new clothes, we need a face, you know, a new hairstyle and this or that. Huh? It's created of our separateness. If you're whole, nothing is lacking. We are complete at ease and we are completely free. So where are the problems? There are no problems. The problems arise only when we get out of this singularity. When we separate from our true self. That's where the problem arises. We see this and want this. We see that and don't like this. We're feeling insecure all the time. So once you see this feeling of feeling insecure, then look at it. Just stay with it. And find its source. Because that feeling makes us going so in so many things, so very wrong. It makes us teaching or preaching to others that what we are doing is good. Just to convince others. If we can convince others, then we feel secure. If we can't convince them, then we feel even more insecure. And then we even might give up practice. Just imagine, you know, being in a completely spiritual, hostile environment. In the end, you will subdue to the pressure of the group. If you're not strong enough, if you don't have a sense of fighting spirit, then you will subdue. And it will also happen in other, even if you're in a spiritual community who thinks this way. After a while, you will subdue. You will think the same way. Because it's difficult to have a different opinion. You're the one who is criticized, and we don't want to be criticized. We want to be one of that group. And that's why we do so many things that are so completely off to our true nature. We want to be recognized by these people. or we want to be recognized by our teacher, or we want to be recognized by our friends. We want to be loved, accepted. And that's why we do so many strange things. Things that all lead to unwholesome states of mind. We buy presents for him, you know, to get accepted. Or we do this for him to get accepted. Or we do that for him to get accepted. But if you meet a good teacher in there, he doesn't accept you. He accepts you only when you accept yourself. You cannot be bought. And then Ajahn Mahabodhi is a good teacher in this respect. He doesn't care what you do or what you say. How much you give him, you know, he doesn't accept you because of that. He doesn't think that you're special because you do this or do that. Only if you do the right thing, you know, do the practice in the correct way and manner. And you accept yourself, then he's accepting you. So do you see? Oh, please use this words, you know, for a reflection about your life. How you followed all these things that I just said. How you followed it in the groups, in the various groups you were. In the various relationships you were. Just because of this feeling of insecurity. And insecurities and fears are very similar feelings. We have fear of being alone. So that's why the Lord Buddha suggested us to go alone in the woods, alone in the forest, in the deep forest where no human being will be able to live because they're all afraid. Or in the caves, or on the top of the hills, just being alone. Because that is the most loathsome feeling that we have. We are afraid to be alone. And we do so many things just because of this fear. Being alone, being not accepted, or this or that. Being separated, wanting this and wanting that. Just use these words and reflect about your life a little bit and see how this pattern goes through from the first day you remember in this life until now. And it still works. Until you don't put an end to it, it will still work. You will do this or you will do that. You might even want to ordain as a monk or as a Meiji, you know, out of this reason. And that is not the correct reason for ordaining, out of fear. The correct reason for ordaining is just one goal. And that's why I say, you know, get up your spirit of fighting. This one goal is Nibbana, freedom from this constant commander who commands us around. Says we should do this or we should do that. We shouldn't do this or we shouldn't do that. We should like this or we shouldn't like that. Getting free of that, that is the only purpose of our ordaining as a monk. Or being a Meiji, becoming a Meiji. No other reasons are valid. When we ordain, then we ordain for the spiritual goal. And the spiritual goal is Nibbana. We don't ordain for the reasons of making merit for our parents. That's not a good idea. Or because all of our friends have ordained. Or because now it's the trend number one to ordain. That's all wrong reasons. The reason for ordaining is the reason for getting out of the cycle of birth and death. That's the only reason. And we give our best. Every moment we give our best. Every moment we foster satis. Foster. We nourish it. However we can do it, we have to think about ourselves, how we can do it, to foster in every moment, in every activity, even the activities we have not even thought about it. Washing ourselves, clothing ourselves, getting up from sleep, to foster sati there. Eating, the most difficult. We only know the moment we are finished when our sati comes back to us. And in the time while eating, the kilesas have the complete rule of our body. They see, they smell, they eat. Isn't it? And sati is gone. The Dhamma is gone. It has to wait, you know. When we eat too much, you know, it has to wait for a long time to come back. Because after eating, then we feel sleepy. So the kilesas had a 100% victory this morning. So. And then even in the afternoon, or in the late morning, we feel tired because of our sleep, or we still feel sleepy, you know, and it doesn't work, and it takes a long time. Just because we lost our sati, that moment we were eating food. Just because we lost sati, we do so many wrong things. And the kilesas know, you know, what leads to what. If they don't know, you know, who knows? They know it. You know, if we eat a little bit too much today, you know, then I get lazy, you know, I can lay my head on the pillow, and so on, and so on. They all know it. Or I feel sick, you know, if I eat too much of this kind of food, I will feel sick, you know, and then I don't need to practice. And I feel sorry for myself being so sick. I don't know. Today it seems to be quite funny. But that is the way the kilesas work. You can't see it. Or you might not see it. Or you don't want to see it. Because that is the main power of avijja, not wanting to see how the things are. Wanting to know, but not wanting to know the truth. Wanting to know in their line. Whatever helps them. That's what they want to know. What feeds them, what supports them, that's what they want to know. They want to know how this universe was created. You know, that feeds them. They don't want to know how to go to the end of avijja. They don't want to know to get rid of themselves, how to get rid of themselves. They don't want to know this. They want to know everything else. It's a part of their play. It's a part of their game. Just get, you know, just dig up some courage, you know, and to go through these difficulty things. And actually, they're not difficulty. They can be just right, you know, hilarious. Once you see it in the proper way, they're really funny. Funny, in the sense, you know, how foolish we are. That's a way of funny. We're so foolish, we're just believing, you know, whatever they say we believe. We never question it. Whatever we think, you know, we believe, whatever we memorize, we believe, whatever, you know, it's all we believe it, 100%. If somebody else says something, you know, we don't believe. Or we might not believe. It's difficult, yeah? Well, to undermine the power. It's just like you believe, you know. So some of the people at least in the world, I hope we are smart. We don't believe all the advertisement that is saying this or saying that. But some people actually believe it, just like words, you know. Or whatever is written in the newspapers. They believe it, you know, this has happened this way. If you are a little bit intelligent, if you are have a little bit of common sense, we know that it's an extraction of what actually happens, or it's a meaning of somebody, or a view, or an opinion. So we don't believe it 100%. So if we are smart in this way, in this kind of way in the world, then let's get smart with ourselves. Don't believe it. It's just a meaning, it's just an opinion, it's just a view, it's just a thought, it's just a memory. That's all what there is. There is a memory. So, you can either drop it or keep it up. There's a thought, you can keep it up or drop it. It's up to you. If somebody gives you some chocolate that you don't like, you know, you give it away. If you like it, you eat it. Isn't it? But with our thoughts, you know, we all eat it. Eat it until we are so sick, you know, we can't even stand it anymore. Our thoughts, we all eat. We all believe them. Our memories, we believe. Even if we know they are wrong, we want to believe them because they are so nice memories. Oh, it was so nice, you know, just that time, you know, it was so nice, you know. Because we want to believe it. And that's why we are so foolish. We believe all these things that are on the screen, you know, just believing a movie, you know, it's reality. Or kids, you know, who... and it's just very similar. Kids who play in games, you know, suddenly they believe all these games are real. If they don't stop playing these games, you know, in the end they will believe that is reality. And that's how we came to this place in the first time. We believe all these things that are happening outside is reality. Wake up from the game. Shut down the computer. And realize that there's a blank screen. A blank screen. Nothing is written on it. Nothing is going on. And that blank screen is Apanasamadhi. Shut down the computer completely. Okay, that's enough for today.